Rick, let's begin with Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen. Despite some gains on the job front, she says there is still a need to boost the U.S. job market by continuing low interest rates for some time to come.
I don't think anybody would argue with the idea that the U.S. job market is still tepid at best. In the doldrums would be another way to describe it. And so when Chair Yellen talks about needing to keep interest rates low for an additional amount of time, I think her primary motivation for doing that, it's been about 2.5 weeks since her March 19th press conference, where she was asked and spontaneously responded to a question about when quantitative easing would end. And she said, in 6 months, which was September. And that was probably more than she wanted to say. It certainly sent financial markets into a tizzy. You know, Wall Street is not quite ready to have quantitative easing end. The interest rate is the price of using somebody else's money. And when the Fed makes so much money available out there in the banking system, the cost of using it falls. And what do people do with that money? Well, one of the things they do is they buy stocks in the stock market. And so folks who follow the stock market are eager to see low interest rates continue in the sense that it props up the value of the stock market to what might be an unrealistic level if we were to ever have normal interest rates again. And we've been just over 5 years at 0% interest rates. And so Chair Yellen was walking back just a bit, stepping back from the comments she'd made several weeks ago, and she was saying that the Fed is going to continue low interest rates until the labor market is healthy again.
And some of those specific signs of a weak job market that she noted, wages rising too slowly, long-term unemployment still high, and a reluctance by employers to create new jobs.
Those things all fall under the kind of generic describe-all word of slack in the labor market. Wages are not rising. Fewer people are choosing to participate. They're not drawn into the labor market by good job prospects. And those who are desperately seeking work are finding that prospects are not so good. Long-term unemployment, as you say, is much higher than it should be. So there's still a lot of weakness. You know, some of that is related to the business cycle, the periodic ups and downs that are driven by Fed mistakes, that are driven by inventory accumulation or decumulation, and most recently the financial crisis. But it appears that there are structural factors at work as well, and that the labor market is changing. You notice that so many of the new innovations that occur, whether it's things in the digital age, whether it's the Facebook application or the next app for somebody's mobile platform, those things don't really require much labor. We're seeing companies sold after startup for $1 billion that only have a dozen employees. And so the nature of the labor market, the availability of jobs, and the way that we create value and measure that value is changing in the economy. So it's not just the Fed's responsibility. We have to do a better job of addressing people's readiness for a rapidly changing job market. And when we get done with all this discussion about the Fed and should they taper, should they not taper, what we're going to have to get back to is the critical role of skills training and education. That's the long-run challenge that we confront, and there's no getting around it, and it's a big reason that we continue to face challenges in the job market, which Chair Yellen noted.
Rick, in Florida this week, Governor Rick Scott signed the Florida GI Bill, a measure aimed at making Florida the most veteran-friendly state in the nation. Talk about the economics of that.
Well, that was a joint effort of President Don Gates and Speaker of the House Will Weatherford. It was one of their five priority agenda items, was to get the Florida GI Bill through. It's got a lot of features in it that help make Florida a very veteran-friendly state. One of them that will shortly be duplicated at the federal level is in-state tuition for servicemen and women. That's the single biggest ticket item in the bill. Close behind that is refurbishment of all the Florida National Guard armories. They're on a multi-year cycle, and we're going to make a serious dent in what remains. And then beyond that, one of the things that was particularly important to the Senate and that we worked hard to make sure remained in the bill was provisions for job market training, working closely with employers, and also for entrepreneurship programs to benefit vets and National Guardsmen and women who re-enter the job market. So a lot of good things in there. The price tag is not large, but I agree that it helps make Florida one of the, if not the most, veteran-friendly state in the nation.
Now, the House this week has approved 4 sales tax holidays for Floridians. We're talking school supplies, hurricane prep, energy-efficient appliances, and gym memberships. Talk about that and the benefit to, I guess, businesses and then to residents.
Well, of course, as a data analyst, it drives one berserk to see that different months have different sales tax regimes, because what happens if in August, before the kids go back to school, so many things are not taxed and people spend so much money, it kind of makes your data series all wonky for tracking retail sales. But obviously, these are priority items for many of the members. To give relief to families who have kids in school or who are preparing for hurricanes. Gym memberships, arguing in favor of physical fitness, who could be against that? So the question is, what will the budget sustain? And given that we've passed a motor vehicle registration fee reduction implemented in 2009 during the recession and now rescinded, that's an expensive item. And when you add that several hundred million dollars a year to other expenses, including people signing up for Medicaid, including higher education, K-12, those are expensive items, and that cost grows every year. So there's not room in the budget for all of them. It's going to be fascinating to see which ones make it through the legislative process.
Briefly, BEI, UWF-BEI, is breaking ground this week for the new East Campus restaurant development.
You know, this is a sign of the times that as our state universities and state colleges become less dependent on state government for financing all of their activities, these institutions look more and more to partnerships with the private sector to provide the dining services that students need. These facilities on the east entrance to the UWF campus will serve students. That's a big volume of traffic that goes past the east entrance on Highway 90 every day. Undoubtedly, some of those folks will stop at these restaurants as well. So this is the wave of the future, is public-private partnerships involving our universities and colleges.
We'll hold it there, Rick. Thanks.
Thank you, Sandra.
You can hear the Economic Report Fridays. I'm Sandra Averhart, WUWF News.